So, I call to order this meeting of the Lindsay City Council and direct the clerk to take roll.
All right, Councilmember Sanchez.
Here.
Flores.
Here.
Watson.
Here.
Cortez.
Here.
And Kimball.
Here. Thank you. Everyone, please join us in standing for the pledge, which will be led by Councilmember Sanchez.
Salute pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is Pastor John Gutierrez here tonight? Not seeing him, we will go ahead with the next agenda item, which will be our public comment. The public is invited to comment on any subject under the jurisdiction of the Lindsay City Council, including agenda items other than notice public hearings. Speakers shall be limited to 3 minutes. There are blank speaker cards on the table to the side here. Would be appreciated if you could complete the card and give it to the clerk before standing at the podium to address the council. Would anyone like to address the council tonight in a public comment?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Eric Sinclair. I'm born and raised in Lindsay, California. I would like to take this time and opportunity to say that when I was around 8 years old, I was really beginning to megahertz and megabytes, and I wanted to come up with something. And I did. My name is Eric Sinclair, and I had this idea when I was younger, and I have the money to make it possible. And with the technology, working with the United States was with China, and we developed a coin called the Bitcoin. We no longer have to rely on the sources of other countries and crypto technology. We have our own crypto technology. Speaking to the President of the United States, as far as trusting China with any of our intellectual property, I do not trust China. Again, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Eric Sinclair. Born and raised in Lindsay, California. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric.
Good afternoon. My name is Fernando Aguilar, and my wife is Laura Aguilar. We've lived here in Lindsay about 20 years. When the drought came along, I live in 240. When the drought came along, my well went dry. We had a meeting here in Lindsay about 2 years ago, telling us that they were going to give us city water. Now the Lindsay City pump is about, I can see it from my house, and there again there's a fire hydrant across the street. We haven't been given any water yet, and it's kind of really becoming a stressful situation for us, where, you know, we can't water the grass, we don't have no grass actually, it's all just weeds. Basically hot showers, because it's in a tank. So they do provide water for us, but it's like I say, hot water, flushing the toilets. It doesn't happen every day. There's just a lot of issues that, you know, we can't wash clothes. We can't wash dishes. There's two homes on my land, which is my sister-in-law. She has a lot of health issues, and she constantly has to wash her clothes because she can't, she gets infections. Just a lot of issues with her, and she lives by herself. But here lately, her son came to live with her. And that's where I'm kind of, like I say, it's really becoming stressful because we're always looking at the tank, how much water we've used. It's almost like living in a third world country there, you know. Mm-hmm. I look out there, and every day I look at the water, see how much we've used. And this is for the past 2 years. I've come and asked questions in the city here, and I basically give them the same answer, which is when funds come available. I understand that the city, you know, they have their financial situations like everybody else. But, boy, it's really becoming a stressful thing for us. And I was just hoping that you guys, I'm not going to get an answer tonight, but I just wanted you guys to be aware that, boy, it's, I'm really needing water, I guess, you know what I'm saying, just like everybody else here in town. And basically, that's it. And I appreciate you guys listening to my...
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. And as you said, we can't really give you answers.
I understand.
But you've been heard.
All right. Thank you.
Council, if I may, I have Mr. Aguilar's contact information. Okay. We will set up a meeting and go through. There is a plan to do that. Some design work is happening right now. We'll see if we can't put some time frames into it.
What was the address?
Thank you.
It's 240. I don't have the actual address, but it's north of town. And it's an area that we are committed to provide potable water to.
Okay. Will that be happening this year?
I don't know if the project will be done this year or not. We'll let council know once I know what the status is on the specifications that are being created and the cost of that.
Okay. We'll continue on with public comment. Mercy?
Hello, my name is Mercedes. I know at the last meeting 2 weeks ago, you guys were talking about the budget. And I know it was the first budget review. And I looked at it today, but it's not on the agenda. Does that mean that you guys approved the budget? As it was? Okay. And then I just need a clarification on that, since it's not on today's agenda.
It is actually on the agenda.
What item is it?
I'm looking to... It's item 9? Item 9.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anyone else wish to address the council? Seeing no one, we will close the public comment period and go to item 1, which is council reports. Council member Flores, anything to report tonight?
Yeah, someone messaged me about wanting to know who the city inspector was and how many times a week that person would come in. I guess they want to do a pergola or something. So I don't know if we could look, because I don't know myself.
Could just refer them to Mike Camarena, probably?
Well, I told them to go over there, but that all they gave them was, not to Mike, of course, but to city services. They just gave him a packet and told him that when the city inspector would come in, they would call him, and they've been waiting for a couple of weeks now.
So. For a couple of weeks?
Mm-hmm.
If you can privately text me the name or something like that or any kind of contact information, we will follow up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Ryan?
Yeah, so Director Camarena and I spent almost 3.5 hours in the beautiful city of Exeter yesterday afternoon, evening, going through the East Kaweah Sustainable Groundwater Agency meeting, where we are finally getting down to some important deadlines and dollars and cents and timelines. Well, I think we'll be having the director of that agency coming to city council meeting here pretty soon.
July 23rd is 10.
Okay. To kind of talk a little bit more about some of the details of it. If you're not familiar, it's a state mandated program that every county has to participate in. It's going to cost the landowners and within our county over $3 million a year to administer, and this is all going to be passed along to the consumers because, you know, most of these are all growers of different fruits and vegetables and things of that nature. He'll go into some more detail about how it will may or may not affect city residents, because everyone in the county is affected by it. But so we are getting close. We have state mandated deadlines and a lot of work, a lot of volunteers, a lot of very sharp engineers, technical people like Mr. Camarena spent a lot of time. And unlike our city council, where we get a small stipend, we get nothing to being on this board. And I just am so grateful for these technical people who make a lot of money, you know, donating their time to get this up and going. And so we'll have some more details on it later, very soon.
Thank you.
And then last thing is we have the parks. We had a meeting with the parks, and so that's moving along. I think we have a draft copy of the letter to the city schools in here, and so we're very optimistic about being able to work with the schools and getting a new park for the east side.
Is the next meeting July 1st?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just like Monday, I guess.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. God, it's Monday. All right. Was there anything additional to report? No. I don't think I did anything special besides be in the heat, but other than that, no. All right. Thank you. Laura? Okay.
Wanted to let everybody know that yesterday I was approached by one of our residents here in town that lives close to the park, our city park, and she wanted to be here today but had other commitments, but wanted me to pass on a big, big thank you, because living by the park, she sees how well the park is being utilized by our residents. She says that during the weekend, all the arbors are always filled with families barbecuing. There's a ton of kids out there enjoying the park and the sports complex, so she just wanted to give us a big shout-out. And the city staff as well, because the park is being kept up and families are able to take advantage of it. And then the last thing I just wanted to mention was I did forward an article today to Bill and Brett regarding Senator Melissa Hurtado. I'm not sure if you guys read in the paper, but she just got, I don't know how many millions of dollars to help with water projects, including here Porterville and some other neighboring areas. So just wanted to see if there's any way to maybe make contact with her and see if we can partner up somehow, or she can put our name out there so that we can also get some help, since we also need those projects up and going.
Okay. Thank you. I attended the TCAG meeting last week. There wasn't much that really pertained to Lindsay, but the legislative update was interesting. TCAG just completed the One Voice trip to Washington, which I did not go on this year, but the report was it was quite successful. They did try this ice cream social idea, which I had mentioned. They got a bunch of ice cream from Rose's Dairy.
Oh, wow.
and had it shipped to Washington, and inside the Capitol building they had a room reserved and had this invited people to come to ice cream social, and it was an opportunity to emphasize or to get out there our point that farm-to-market roads need some support, especially like our dairy roads, that it would be in the national interest to have some funding to improve or keep those roads maintained. And so it went over really well. It was really popular. They ran out of ice cream, they said. But they did have a lot of candy from staffers.
Oh, wow.
And so they were passing that out at the end, so everybody got something.
That's
was
cool.
Happy that it came to their thing.
Wow. From Porterville to Washington, D.C.?
Porterville or Hanford or over to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So it was a creative idea, and it seemed to go over really well. They got a lot of publicity from that. Just to note that in the Porterville Recorder today, there was an article about the Lindsay Labyrinth, promoting the labyrinth. It's basically complete. You go out there and walk the labyrinth.
So that's nice. I think that the Cultural Arts Council will have some sort of little ceremony on that, but that hasn't been scheduled yet. Mm-hmm. And with that, we'll go to staff reports.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I actually met with Jan McGuire today, and she was asking about appropriate dates. I said we would accommodate. I asked her if she wanted to use the birth date of the individual whose honor it's dedicated in. And if that's January, I think she'd like to do it sooner. Mm-hmm. So I'll encourage her. She's not a member of the Cultural Arts Council.
She is.
Well, then you'll have it all dialed.
She hasn't been at some of our meetings recently with health issues.
Right.
Okay.
But everybody's excited.
We'll try to coordinate something.
Rob still has a little bit of work to do, finishing work to round some of the sharp corners out there, but it is 99% done. It is absolutely walkable. It's beautiful. It's fun. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people out there enjoying that. So, and we think we're probably the only municipality that has one of these things.
I think in Tulare County, we're unique in having a labyrinth.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Staff has met actually twice in the past week with Ergos Tech regarding establishing project entitlements and required environmental work. In fact, I had a meeting with Quadnoff, with QK, with Ergos Tech, and we did a video conference call with their environmental specialists to help provide some guidance there and help them get in line so that this project can move forward and hopefully present to council in an acceptable way in which entitlements could be granted. So we're working on that, and we're pretty excited about the potential there. There will be coming a CUP coming soon for a recycling center on South Mirage. The individual's been waiting for a while, and they needed to create a proper site plan, truthfully, and they finally have that. And it'll be down there where the grocery store is. We've had one down there before, but it requires the CUP process. Council will see an annexation and pre-zoning request for the wastewater treatment facility at the next meeting. This is the first step in doing some development work out there. We're the only city in the county that does not have that land annexed, and so we're coming in line with what the other cities are doing. It's appropriate. There will be a workshop with council on July the 23rd for large revisions to the sign ordinance. I know that's been a concern for a few of you, how yard sales are being managed, and we want, rather than just bring the ordinance to you, I want you to be able to weigh in on and make sure that you're comfortable with the language being used. Things that have changed, and our ordinance is pretty old, is we have regulated the copy, which is what the sign says. And with the fairly recent, maybe not so recent, Supreme Court decisions, these are free speech issues. And so we can regulate size, we can regulate placement, some timing, but we don't get to regulate the copy. And so we want to do so intelligently, providing the greatest support we can to our residents without creating a nuisance, you know, things littering the countryside here. So hopefully we'll be able to talk through that and have some good, we'll get it to you as early as we can so you get a chance to review it and get some good questions, and so we get this document that you all be happy with and hopefully your residents will be happy with too. A lot of work's been going into this behind the scenes. An accessory dwelling unit ordinance will be coming up. What's that about? Tiny homes, duplexes. We have a second dwelling unit ordinance right now, but it's dated and it doesn't conform to current state law. And if anything is older than January of 2017, it's got to be redone. And I think it's pretty simple to do, but it's the state's way of creating affordable housing without having large apartment complexes. I'm personally supportive of it, and we'll be bringing that to you on July the 23rd by a public hearing. And staff is also studying community development and other fees that we charge. A lot of these fees haven't been updated in a long, long time to bring us in line with other communities and with the time that we have to put into this, which is that we're paying to put into this. So those are general things that are upcoming. Mike and his team of wizards have the water plant working up to full capacity. They're pushing over 1,600 gallons a minute through that water plant. Now we've had some struggles with the turbidity in the Fryant-Kern Canal. These guys are reacting to it quickly, and they're doing a good job. That's the good news. The bad news is the groundwater that we're pumping, we're still pulling some air up. Some of what Councilmember Watson's working on, Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, you have ag wells that are pulling the water up. They're pulling the groundwater table down. When that happens, you have your well piping. It's got perforations at different levels. And if the perforation is an area where you don't have, and correct me if I misspeak here, Mike, but if the perforation is in an area that doesn't have water, it's going to pull some air into it. That air gets entrained with the water. It comes through the system. And when it goes downstream, you know, water doesn't compress much. Air will compress. And so you can get a hammering effect. The water may look white. You may have some rust come out of your spigot. So we're working hard on that. We're trying to use as much of the canal water as we can since it's flowing freely white right now. We have a large ability to do that. But it stresses the importance of the Sigma work that Councilmember Watson and Mike and others are doing right now. That's our water story. Frontier, that vault that's out there in the roundabout. It hasn't been run over yet. We had underground service alert people out there today marking that, and their crews are going to be on board here pretty doggone quick. I'm looking for my note on this again.
We have heard that before.
I know you've heard this before, and somebody's lips were moving. You wonder what's happening there. But we've been pushing them. We talked to leadership, and they say, we've approved this. The people in the field should be doing it. We talked to the people in the field and said, we don't know where the approval paperwork is. And so it's a whole lot of this. They claim they are going to be here starting on July 1st and 2nd, a conduit crew and a splicing crew. They'll do as much of the work as they can in the evenings. They'll have to do some, like the splicing, the color coding of wires and so forth, and it's quite detailed. They'll need to do some of that during the day. They will try to minimize the disruption of traffic that's happening out there. I'm excited that they are finally moving forward on it. So let's hope we're not fibbing this time.
Yeah.
Lindsay Soccer Complex update. There is one youth team using one of the fields until July the 3rd. Once that happens, we're going to cut the grass really short, do some overseeding, do some required maintenance, and so I'll be ready for the next season that comes up. But we're excited about all the activity happening out there, and we're going to attempt to burn in the lines and so that the striping will last longer and it's not frustrating for people because it's cost prohibitive for us to be out there every week. So this is hopefully a solution that will work for everybody. Mountain Home crews have been here taking care of our storm basins. They've been in Sequoia, Oak Street, and moving to Mariposa next. They've been called away to a fire, but they're coming back, Mike. And these guys are a good deal for us in keeping those things free of debris and growth and so forth so that they work properly. If you're driving around the community, you may see some new striping happening at our school sites. Our crews are out there painting those intersections. And development is happening out at Maple Valley Estates. We've got SMEA has been able to get a hold of the three lots that were undeveloped, and so they're moving those things forward. And I have many other details that I will share with you via an email, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Bill. Any questions? We'll move on to our next item, which is our consent calendar. We have six items on consent calendar. Everyone has that before them. So unless someone wants something pulled for further discussion, this can be approved with one motion.
I'm looking at resolution 1939 and 1940. Mm-hmm. I think I would like to discuss that further.
So there's two resolutions. Would you like to have both of those pulled for discussion?
Yes.
Okay. Would you like to make a motion to approve the other items on consent calendar, and then we'll go to those?
So motion to approve the consent calendar minus the resolution 1939 and resolution 1940.
All right. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Who needs to talk about that? Brett, probably.
Sure.
Bank accounts.
So the first one is part of the meeting we had. We'll start with item number four, which is the resolution 1939 to approve the creation of Fund 5-260 to account for SP1 funds. So SP1 is, you've seen the signs around the state, it's the road money, the gas tax that was there, then tried to overturn, but survived it. And so we have reports that we put together for those each year. We've been having those monies go into the gas tax, which is Fund 261. But we're finding that reports will be easier to produce if the SP1 money is isolated into its own fund. And so we're asking the council to approve the formation of Fund 260, which would be SP1, and 261 is the gas tax fund. So it's just allowing us to add that fund in our accounting.
So you're going to have two accounts, 260 and 261?
Yeah, 261 is in existence right now for gas tax.
Uh-huh.
And 260 would be specific SB1 money. and those fall under the restricted funds that you'll see in the budget. And so there, we'll talk about that later tonight.
Okay. And I'm sorry.
Oh. So there's going to be, you said, two separate accounts.
Two separate funds.
Because down here it says Fund 260 instead of Fund 261. So are we removing one?
No, it's pulling SB1 out of 261 and putting it into 260. And so that what the staff report is trying to say is that SB1 won't go into 261 anymore. It'll go instead into 260.
So it's currently going into 261. Mm-hmm. So now they're just pulling it, creating a
tone. Because it is gas money, but it's a separate pot.
Yeah, because it says instead, so I figure they're taking one out. Instead of going here, it's going to go
separate. Yeah, so the financial statements and the budget will have a Fund 260, a Fund 261, there's a 263. There's a number of them to deal with these restricted funds that go for transportation purposes. This one would be specific to SB1.
And the reason for that is just to make reporting more efficient.
So all the restricted funds are separate. Is that correct?
Let's see.
Because I think they should be.
There are some that have the same source. In the gas tax, there's four different gas taxes that come from the state. Those are all combined for ease of looking at those. And you'll have in the revenue section of those funds in the budget, you'll see the different sources itemized. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have a line item. And right now, if you go to page 54 in the budget, it'll be in the binder. You're going to see the title of that page on page 54 is called Restricted Funds. Mm-hmm. And there are four funds listed there. 261, which is gas tax. 263, which is Measure R. 264, which is gas tax transit fund. 265, which is the STP highway funds. And 266 is the LTF. 266 used to be part of 263, and several months ago we broke those apart, because we had TCAG asked us to have them separate funds. You get down to 261, and you'll see gas tax of SB1 and then just gas tax. And so that line that's gas tax of SB1 will be the sole item in the new fund, 260.
Okay, question, Brett. So the SB1, that tax, goes solely to our road infrastructure,
correct.
All of it, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Any of these other tax funds, do those go towards the roads or
they do? And we'll see in the transfer schedule, in order to have them go towards a capital project like that, they have to come in, they record in the restricted fund, then there's a transfer out of that restricted fund to the capital improvement project fund, and that's where all the expenses run through for the different street projects. And the transfer schedule that's later on in the budget shows you the source of those monies and how they come from this and go into that.
So all of these are only solely for streets? Or that can go to infrastructure, yes. For the streets, fixing,
maintaining. Yeah, street lights. We have street lights in there, street sweeping, street signs, vehicle and fleet maintenance associated with that gas tax. There is some wages, benefits, and insurances that come in to those funds as well, because they're the funds that go to the project that are paying the salaries of those that are doing
the project. So there's a percentage that comes out
right.
of that. Okay.
Okay, we get to number four. Number five.
Mm-hmm. So number five then, this is the one with the bank accounts. And so we went up and met with HCB, and one of the things that they told us at our meetings is they wanted to see the CDBG funds, the home and cal home funds, in their own separate interest-bearing bank account.
As they should be.
So we had some funds. As of lately, we have been trying to consolidate those for the ease of management with the banking. And we've actually closed the water, which was the bank account for Fund 552, and the bank account for sewer, which was 553, that really only ran our debt service through that for the debt service we have in our water and our sewer funds. We closed those, so now they're closed. I've got to come back and get council's approval to reopen two accounts so we have ones available to put these funds into. And once those bank accounts are open and the funds are in there, they'll show up on the treasurer's report we have each month. Just like the water and sewer ones did before, we have a name of the account, the fund number associated with it, and the value. And that will be on the treasurer's report for each of them. And so this, the resolution 1940 is to comply with the HCD request.
How are these accounts being managed?
Monitored?
Yes, monitored.
So with the banking, you have your different bank accounts for the cash itself. At the same time, you have your general ledger, and that's tracking all of your assets, liabilities, all of that. Cash in the bank is one of the assets. And so each fund in the general ledger or in the child balance will show you how much cash is in each bank account that's connected to each fund that we have for the city. For example, that fund 260, it's going to have in our general ledger, fund 260, bank account A, bank account B, bank account C, how much money are in those different funds that are associated with fund 260. Because we have two or three or four of these where money can be in those, we're trying to consolidate down to one, so you see fund 260, bank account, here's the cash, instead of having to sit there and add up the numbers when you look at the financial statements. Does that answer the question?
Now, are these funds going to be tied to the loans that are given out for CDBG and home loans?
So the city's not giving any loans right now, but on the financial statements, you have all the different funds associated with HCD transactions.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those have balances for the loans that we've given out and all the different components for each of those different funding sources. So the financial statements are what track all of that. This will be a single number that says, here's how much cash is in the bank. Because this is just to open a bank account. It doesn't change any of our financial position. It doesn't change any of the bank statements, the bank statements for the financial statements, except for you would now in your assets section have bank account for CBG, bank account for Cal Home at Home.
Okay, well, it's really important for me to know that they're going to be tied in with the loans when given, because this was one of the major problems.
We're not giving any loans.
The last time.
Yeah, so even if we start doing loans again, then all of those transactions would be recorded in those funds that are associated with those, and those funds would only be tied to these bank accounts. And so all of that is a self-contained system at that point, and so you're going to be able to monitor everything that's going on with those transactions.
So if we're not doing the loans, who's doing the loans?
They're not happening right
now. Yeah, HCD has told us not to do any loans right now.
So we're restricted on that. There'll be an HCD discussion later tonight.
Okay.
So question, even though we're not doing any loans, so past loans that people are paying on, where does that go into that?
So right now it's going into those funds that we have and into our general bank accounts. And what HCD is saying, we don't want it mixed in with the rest of the bank accounts. We want it in their own accounts.
So
that's why we're trying to do this just to comply with the
system. Clean it up.
Yeah. Good. Because it needs to be cleaned up.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing. Oh. You mentioned something about closing the water and the sewer funding.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that done?
So it's the water and sewer, the bank accounts
yeah.
that were for water and sewer. So back in, I want to say either August or September of last year, we came to council and said there are too many bank accounts. Most cities only have one. Everything works out of that single bank account. And so when we have so many, auditors looking at saying, this is too convoluted having this many bank accounts, we consolidate down. So with the bank accounts tied to water and sewer, those were just for their debt service. So once a year, we would transfer money from our general account, not each general account, our deposit bank account where we put all the money in, we would transfer out of that one into the account, the bank account for the water or sewer debt. And then U.S. Bank or USDA would do an automatic pool from that account to pay for that debt service. And we communicate with them like, this is a silly thing to do, pull it directly from our deposit account instead of a separate account. We said, all right. And so we've updated all of those, and so that account became obsolete. No money was going in, no money was coming out, because all of its functions in our main deposit account.
So is that, are you commingling then the sewer and the water monies?
So all of the monies for the city, whether it be sewer, water, streets, refuse, general, all of that goes into the deposit account, and that's the appropriate way to manage it. That's how most of these do. By having all the different bank accounts in the past, we were doing it contrary to the way most cities do it. Mm-hmm. You use your general ledger to monitor what's going on in that bank account. And you can think of it as, in your general ledger, each fund owns a certain share of the money that's in the bank. And so you monitor how much belongs to the general fund, how much belongs to wellness, how much belongs to water. By looking at the general ledger, this can say $50,000 for wellness. We look over at the bank and it says $2 million. We know 50 of that $2 million goes to wellness.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. If there's no further questions, then we need a motion to approve items 4 and 5.
Move for approval.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded, and these are resolutions, so would the clerk please take roll.
Council, I'm sorry, Mayor Pro Tem Cortez.
Aye.
Councilmember Watson.
Aye.
Councilmember Flores.
Aye.
Councilmember Sanchez.
Aye.
And Mayor Kimball.
Aye. Motion carries. Move on to item 4, which is a public hearing. Second reading of Ordinance 574, authorizing zoning change for APN 205031001, Johnson. And this will be presented by our city manager.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council. This is the second reading of Ordinance 574, approving a zone change from light industrial to R17. There are two components of it, the ordinance and the resolution. They were both approved last time without any recommended changes. Therefore, there have been no changes. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Bill at this time? Where's the actual resolution? Page 22. Because on our second readings, we need to say the thing.
Sorry, it's
23.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right, if there's no further questions or discussion, what action would the council like to take?
I propose that the council declare the second reading of Ordinance Number 574. An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Lindsay amending the zoning designation for a 4-acre parcel bound by Eastwood Avenue to the west, North Mount Vernon Avenue to the north and east, and West Fraser Street to the south, and the city zoning map as adopted by Ordinance 437 of the City of Lindsay, and waive the reading of the ordinance in full.
Okay. We have to pause here for a second. Why is this a public hearing? Didn't we have
just
a public hearing the first time?
Just the first time.
Oh. Okay. All right. You're good. No, you're good. Okay. So we have a motion to authorize the second reading. Is there a second?
I second.
We moved by Cortez and seconded by Flores. Would the clerk take roll?
All right. Mayor Pro Tem Cortez.
Aye.
Councilor Flores?
Aye.
Councilor Sanchez?
Aye.
Councilor Watson?
Aye.
Mayor Kimball?
Aye. Second reading is complete and approved. Item 5 is a second reading for Ordinance 576, establishing noticing regulations and procedures for property subdivision.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is the second reading. This change to the subdivision ordinance would require a notice public hearing as part of the process for tentative maps and parcel map subdivision applications. And we did some text cleanup to address the current absence of a planning commission. At the last meeting, address questions. Council can institute that at any time it wants. We just need to find people willing to do so and create a framework for that. But this simply cleaned up the language. No changes were requested to the ordinance. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Bill on this one? Did we close public hearing at the last meeting on this one?
Yes.
If there's no questions, what action would the council like to take?
We'll move for approval.
You gotta read a little thing.
Oh. I thought we could wait with that. Yeah, that's right. Let's see. This is the first. This is the second, right?
Correct.
Yeah, it's on page 28.
31.
I have 28.
You have it.
Okay.
I propose that the council adopt ordinance number 576 and waive the reading of the ordinance in full. An ordinance amending chapter.
Wait, you need to read this right now. Sorry.
An ordinance amending chapter 17.04, chapter 17.16, and chapter 17.24 of title 17 of the Lindsay Municipal Code, adding procedures for public noticing of tentative subdivision maps and parcel maps, and waive the reading of the ordinance in full.
This is the second reading.
And the second reading, yeah.
So we have a motion by Watson. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Sanchez. Would the clerk please take roll?
Councilmember Watson?
Aye.
Councilmember Sanchez?
Aye.
Councilmember Flores?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Cortez?
Aye.
And Mayor Campbell?
Aye. Motion carries. 5-0. The next item, public hearing, first reading of Ordinance 575, establishing sidewalk vendor permitting procedures and regulations. This was continued from the June 11th meeting and will be presented by Bill Ziegler.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So as we go through this, we do invite public comment to it again since they didn't really have it to digest the last go around. So in 2018, the state legislature adopted and the governor signed a law limiting the authority of cities in California to prohibit and or regulate street vending. It became effective on January the 1st. The new law prohibits cities from regulating sidewalk vendors except in accordance with provisions of the law. The law would require a city that elects to adopt a sidewalk vending program to, among other things, not require a sidewalk vendor to operate within a specific parts of a public right-of-way, except when that restriction is directly related to objective health, safety, or welfare concerns, and not restrict sidewalk vendors to operate only in designated neighborhoods or areas. The law does authorize the city to adopt additional requirements regulating the time, place, and manner of sidewalk vending if the requirements are directly related to objective health, safety, and welfare concern. The law also authorizes the city to prohibit sidewalk vendors in areas located within the immediate vicinity of permitted certified farmers market. That was a question that came up last time, so you can create a buffer around the market so that they're not riding the coattails of that and not paying. Permitted swap meter and to restrict or prohibit sidewalk vendors within the immediate vicinity of an area designated for a temporary special permit issued. For example, we have OBF at the park. You have a soccer event happening. You know, you have the ability to regulate that. Using the allowances and limitations of the new law, the city staff has drafted a street vending ordinance that would be used to regulate the time, place, and manner of sidewalk vending. And it's based on the objective health, safety, and welfare concerns that are described at the beginning of the ordinance. And council, I can go through as much or as little detail as you want, but the intent here is to have some regulation on sidewalk vending, to not be onerous, but to have some control over it, and to make sure that people have business licenses and health certificates and those sorts of things. We're not reacting to anything yet, but we want to be as in front of it as we can be.
Thank you, Bill. So I feel satisfied with the presentation, but council members need more detail or have questions? Okay, if not, then we will open we will continue the public hearing. If anyone here tonight wishes to speak in favor of this ordinance, which will establish sidewalk vending rules and regulations, they may come forward and speak at this time.
Good evening. My name is Eric Sinclair, and I'm for this ordinance. I'm for sidewalk vendors. I'm for if you want to open up a shop and follow, you know, rules and regulations in order to get paid, do it.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else wish to address the council speaking in favor of? Not would anyone like to address the council speaking in opposition of this ordinance? Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing and bring the item back before the council. What action would the council like to take?
Move for approval.
So it's an ordinance, first reading.
I propose on page 34 in my paperwork. I propose that the council declare the first reading of ordinance number 575, an ordinance enacting chapter 5.36 and amending section 5.04.520 of the Lindsay Municipal Code establishing permitting procedures, fees, and regulations pertaining to sidewalk vending, and waive the reading of the ordinance in full.
Thank you. We have a motion to approve this ordinance. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, moved by Cortez and seconded by Flores. Would the clerk please take roll?
Mayor Pro Tem Cortez?
Aye.
Councilmember Flores?
Aye.
Councilmember Sanchez?
Aye.
Councilmember Watson?
Aye.
And Mayor Kimball?
Aye. Your first reading is approved 5-0. Item 7, it's our 2019-2020 Landscape and Lighting Assessment District renewals and various resolutions, which I don't know if we have to take separately or can take it with one motion. Oh, okay, taken with one motion, and this will be presented by Mike Camarena.
Thank you, Mayor Kimball and Council. Similar to the last 25 years, we are presenting new resolutions for Council's consideration. And it's the same exact process as it has been in the past. I think the only difference in the process has been our required transition to electronic filing with the county. But other than that, we prepare an engineer's report. That's resolution 1941. 1942 is giving the preliminary approval of the engineering report. This is for council. And then resolution 1943 declares the intent to levy and collect the assessments for fiscal year 1920 on each of the 8 districts. And then also set the public hearing for the districts to be at the next council meeting, which is July 9th. So on page 49 of the packet, summary of the 8 districts are there, and there are 2 districts, number 6 and number 8, that are seeing no change in the assessment. And then the other 6 districts are seeing a very slight or minor reduction. So with that, and we have the ability to look at each district via Google Earth if we need to, but with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
I live in one of these districts, so do I need to step out or?
For the one, yes, that's what we've done in the past.
Yeah.
And that would be Maple Valley Estates number.
So we need to step out today or just like next time?
The process is you're seeking, you still, if you're voting on something, you can't influence the vote, right, Council?
Sorry.
So everything except item 7.
Okay.
That's what we've done in the past too, is just basically one of it.
Questions before the vote?
Before the vote, are there any questions for Mike?
She can, not about hers.
Right.
Yeah. So I just wanted to ask, not about mine, The number six, the Sierra Vista assessment one. So that's the one where, if I'm not mistaken, the money for that assessment district is being collected and saved until it reaches a certain amount so that they can start with the project, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, and I think we had talked about a five-year thing. So are we in year two or is this year one?
I think we're in year three.
Three?
Yeah, I think
okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Just wanted to clarify that.
That's a good point. So if there's no further questions, I would entertain a motion on items 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 8.
Move for approval.
Moved by Watson.
Second.
Second by Cortez. Do we need to take roll? Yes. So would the clerk take roll?
Right. Councilor Watson.
Aye.
Councilor Mayor Pro Tem Cortez.
Aye.
Councilor Flores.
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, sorry.
Sanchez.
Sorry. Aye.
Aye.
You distracted me.
It's going to take like pretty fast, I think. Unless we all have a problem with the maple flower.
With what?
With, yeah, is it even changing? 83 cents.
It's a nice paper comment,
right? Okay.
Oh,
so
I don't know.
Is there a motion on item 7?
Move to approve item 7.
Second okay. By Flores. Second by Sanchez. Would the clerk take roll?
All right. Councilor Flores.
Aye.
Councilor Sanchez.
Aye.
Councilor Watson.
Aye.
And Mayor Kimball.
Aye. Motion carries 5-0.
Cortez,
4-0. Let me correct myself. Our next item is an update and discussion, and we're pleased to have Carl Schlott with us tonight, all the way from Virginia, to talk to us about this item.
Good evening. It is my great pleasure to be here before you to present staff's update on the General Plan Updates project. We're going to give you a pretty high-level overview because this is a detailed, legally complicated document. I'll try not to razzle-dazzle you with a lot of jargon or details that aren't necessary, but I'm here to answer any questions that you might have at this point. So let me dive on in, and we'll see where this goes. So let's start with what a general plan is. It's a constitution for the growth and development of a community. It's a legal document that's required under state law, and it informs and guides your zoning actions, your development regulations, and really the future pattern of what the city will become. It also expresses your community values, what you want to be in the future. So if you compared it to a car, it's not your rearview mirror, it's your windshield. Where are we going as a community? It is an information source that citizens, staff, nonprofit organizations can draw on to help make informed decisions, make applications, to learn and know more about the community and its future and its needs. And it can also be a catalyst to help create positive community change. So it's not just a piece of paper, it's a process. And during that process, people could learn and make it better. And that's our goal for this. There are 8 mandated elements or chapters to the general plan. The project before you affects 4 of those. The existing plan was adopted in 1989. The housing element, which is one of the chapters, is really the core and the heart of the project, and that was approved in 2015 and certified in 2017. And the state is requiring every 4 years that that element be updated. The problem is when laws change, they attach different requirements to the housing element process. It's a gotcha. The state knows that you have to do this and so they tag on other requirements. And that is really the project that is before you. There are minor amendments to the land use element. There's a requirement for a new environmental justice element, and there's a requirement for a revision to the safety element. A little later in my presentation, I'll give you quick snippets for what that is all about. There's a requirement under state law that the general plan chapters or elements are consistent with each other. And so there is a risk as the plan ages past, you know, 30 years old, most of it, that there might be problems with consistency. And so that's just one of those things as a professional I need to let you know. That's a long-term risk for the city. Thanks. Really appreciate your help. You're doing a great job. So why do we need to do this besides that the state is telling us? It is a practical, there's a practical need to plan. We need to know where we are going as a community. We need to understand issues related to growth and development. We need to address change. The community is a different place than 1989. And if you just look back to all the change that's happened in society and in the community, it's a completely different place. The state legal requirements are detailed, specific, and directive. The housing element has to have specific content, and it is reviewed and approved by the state. So what will happen is, ultimately, the council, through a public hearing process, will approve, I hope, the element, and then it gets forwarded to the state for their certification. And there's a give and take, a conversation between the city and the state that will happen. There's never a time when a city or a county or a town gives an element to the state and the state says, great, love the work. They're very picky. And what we're trying to do through our careful review is to keep that list of required changes to a minimum. It is also necessary to avoid some legal possible consequences. If the housing element does not satisfy state law, the city could be referred to the Attorney General's office for action. And that's happened on over 100 occasions in the state of California. So there's that possibility. There's also a risk of private party legal action if you adopt a land use action, such as a rezoning or a conditional use that is inconsistent with the general plan, or that there's plan problems with the document itself. There's a potential for a legal challenge. So it is, in my view, in the city's best interest to try to dot all the I's and cross all the T's so that you can avoid those risks. Next, please. So the project approach is pretty straightforward. You can go and click. Thanks. Now, we want it to pass muster legally. And no one in this room, I believe, wants to send something to the state and open up the city to legal challenge or question. We want to do it at a minimal cost. We want to be realistic in its implementation. So it's not just a plan that you put on a shelf and forget about it. It's a plan for action. Things that you can do and accomplish to create positive change in the community. And what we're going to be bringing forward to you is framed that way. We hope to be transparent that all the information is public information. Okay, there's nothing hidden here. If people want to look at the source notes or why we make recommendations about this, that's all publicly available. We want this to be a process of community engagement. So during the fall, there were two community workshops. We also put the basic project documents online, and it's our hope within a week or so, depending on Bill's final sign-off on the draft, to have a draft out for public comment. Because what we find is it's not just a legal requirement to engage the community. We can learn from the community. There are things that we don't get at all, and we know that. And it helps create a better plan and a better product when we hear from the community. Next. Okay, the project scope. What is the project about? There are four pieces to this. You can go ahead and click. The heart of it is the housing element revision, and that's required by the state. That has to be done by the end of this year. The next is a new element, a new state law requirement for an environmental justice element. And that deals with issues about treating people of all classes and races and incomes fairly. And I'll get into some of the detailed requirements of what that has to look like in the plan. But the point is that's a completely new chapter to your general plan. So this is new ground for the city. The land use element is part of your community development element. I won't get too much into the jargon. It's basically where different things should be built in the future according to the city. And that plan has to reflect what is talked about in the environmental justice element. That's a really small piece of the puzzle, like 5% of the project. And then finally, there's a requirement for updates to the safety element, which deals with community hazards such as urban and wildland fires, slope instability, flood hazards, and other threats to public safety. You can go ahead and click. The work that's been done to date, we are about one review internally away from having a complete draft housing element for public review and comment, and we're thrilled about that. We have about half of the work done on the next two elements, land use and environmental justice. Most of that background work, we've been doing some field work looking at these communities. We've identified five what are called disadvantaged communities, and state law is very specific about this. It's when you have 10 or more housing units in a small area that's outside of the city limits, that's in a low-income housing or low-income census tract within the sphere of influence that the county determines for our planning area. And so we have found five of these communities that we're studying right now. And then we are pending work on safety, starting some conversations internally about what needs to legally be done and how we're going to be able to accomplish that within the time constraints, because we do need to get a product to council. I believe it's December 10th is your December meeting. That's our target. In terms of the housing element, the key changes that are included would be updated information. Even though 2 to 4 years has passed, a lot of the information has changed. We are recommending a simplification of housing programs. Bill and I were joking earlier today that one of my old sayings is to be in it to win it, that we don't want to recommend an action or a policy that sets the city up for failure. That's not something that's achievable. And one of the beauties of this process is it forces you to look at your past housing policies and ask hard questions. Was this effective? Was this able to be done? And the draft that will be provided will answer those questions. And what we found was the city has limited capacity. We cannot do it all. We do not have unlimited resources. We can't be all things to all people. We try to do good with what we can, but we can't do it all. And so it's a shift away from reliance on grant funding, where we have very limited capacity and some past problems, and really to what I call fast actions, low-hanging fruit, things that we can do with our existing resources quickly to create positive change. So the element recommends 29 actions. I know that sounds like a lot of work. 8 of those, we believe, can be accomplished in the first 2 quarters of 2020. And so those would include 3 text amendments to your zoning ordinance that are actually minor and procedural related to housing, and then some informational items that would be published on the website, and then some training for staff related to fair housing law. The rest is mostly statements of policy and partnership. We're looking for community partners to step up to do a lot of the work instead of having the city or the expectation that the city will do it all. Okay, click. So what's next? One more click. That's really the only date that matters right now. We hope to have this to you by December 10th. We have a legal obligation to get it into the state by the end of the year. This will satisfy that. There's a lot of turf to cover between here and there. It will be a busy summer for staff, and it will be an exciting time. Once it is approved and forwarded to the state, they